the air raid of Seattle. Smashing show windows and looting displays, a crowd in excess of 1,000 people enforced Seattle's first wartime blackout in defiance of police. The crowd, completely out of control of city police, milled through the center of the city's business district for an hour beginning that midnight, Tuesday, December 9, 1941. Approximately 30 show windows, ranging from tiny shoe shop panes to huge glass plates, were smashed. Nearly all of the displays were looted, some of the merchandise being thrown in the streets and other more valuable pieces disappearing into the pockets of stragglers. A 19-year-old girl, Mrs. Ethel Chevalier, wife of a seaman aboard a United States destroyer, readily admitted being a leader of the mob. Assistant Police Chief Walter B. Kirtley said, "She and a male companion were held on open charges. If I could have found a brick or a block, I would have thrown it myself," she said calmly. "We've got to show these people they can't leave their lights burning. This is war. They don't realize one light in the city might betray us. That's my patriotism." Observers at the riot recalled her excited shouts, quote, "I'm married to a man in the Navy. He's out there fighting. Are you going to stand by while these lights threaten the life of our city? Break them. Break them. Turn them out." The demonstration began at Pike Street, near the city's busiest corner. A jam of people gathered beneath a huge neon sign stretching nearly half a block on each side of an upstairs clothing store. The sign, left on when nearly all other lights were turned off at 11 o'clock that night, shed a ghastly glow over the entire intersection. Yells and catcalls commenced almost immediately, and by midnight, bottles, rocks, tin cans, and old shoes were being heaved despite the efforts of a squad of police. Eventually, an employee of a sign company broke out of a third-floor window from inside the building and inched his way along the top of the sign in a shower of miscellaneous trash to cut a connection that extinguished the light. Police cars pushing their way along the curbs started the crowd moving, while an officer with a loudspeaker urged all civilians to go home. In part, members of the crowd were prevented from complying by the fact that most of the city buses had stopped running and amateur officers in other parts of the city were forcing all private autos to stop. Many of the members of the crowd were defense workers who intersected 4th Avenue and made their way downtown after work, only to be stopped from going any further. Moving away from the intersection, the crowd, urged on by shouting women, gathered at a small jewelry store across the street where a single light burned in an entry. A rock thrown from far back smashed the plate glass door, and a triumphant youngster rushed inside to grab the offending bulb. At 5th and Pike, miscellaneous objects showered down against windows of another jewelry store where lighted Christmas trees have been left burning. One bottle cracked a door pane, and to divert the crowd's attention, a police officer kicked out the remainder of the glass and crawled inside to the light switch, and he turned off the light. The next objective was two doors away, where two windows splintered under the impact of boots. The crowd waited only long enough to see lights inside blink out, then streamed across the street, past a hopelessly outnumbered police cordon, to smash the displays in a shoe store showing one of the most expensive lines of men's footwear. After the crowd moved on, the storefront gaped vacantly. Most of the displayed footwear was gone, and a signal, an ancient shoe with its laces broken, teetered on the edge of the window. In all, the main crowd covered city 6 blocks, leaving a wake of shattered glass and missing merchandise. They were finally dispersed by 150 home guards, reinforcing police and a squadron of home guard motorcycle Cossacks, trick riders, who were locally famous as a quasi-official police force.